The Wintrust Business Lunch. Lisa Nucci joins us now, Chief Marketing Officer at Choose Chicago. Lisa, I'm glad you've got some time for us. I would imagine you're pretty busy these days.
It's a good busy. Thank you for having me this morning.
What does Choose Chicago do? Who do you work for? What's your objective?
Sure. So Choose Chicago is the official destination marketing organization for the city of Chicago. So any major destination, Orlando, Las Vegas, London, all of those major destinations have a DMO, like we like to call it. And so I have a really great job. I'm from Chicago, and what I get to do is encourage people to come here on vacation, move here permanently, and also host conventions like the DNC. So that's my job day in and day out.
So we don't see your work so much in Chicago then, but maybe somebody in Orlando or Texas does, huh?
Absolutely. And overseas. International is a huge market for us. We just got back from Mexico City. Mexico City is number two below Canada for people who come here during our peak months. And so definitely want to make sure Chicago is top of mind when picking where people spend their time and vacation dollars.
Really? So by nation, it's Canada one, Mexico two. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I see so many people from Asia, so many, I'm going to guess, Chinese, Japanese, Koreans in Chicago. Does that resonate with you?
Absolutely. So Europe and Asia are also really key for us. A lot of where we're focusing on is making sure that a lot of these markets post-pandemic don't have as many direct flights as they used to. But Chicago was so lucky that we obviously have, you know, O'Hare and Midway. And so we've definitely been able to bolster those direct flights, which ultimately impact travel coming from Europe and Asia. But we're going to be in London in October with the Chicago Bears when they're there. And so just continually to spread the word of how amazing Chicago is to come any day of the year, not just in the summer.
Nice job getting us the DNC, Lisa. I'm going to get you in for a raise.
I actually did not work here, so I cannot take credit, but it's been really, I started about a year ago, right before they secured the DNC, but it's been awesome working with the team at the host committee, the state, and the city, just really trying to create a holistic experience for our delegates and media that are coming here.
So what are you going to do for them? What's going to be different in Chicago now through next week?
So I would say that for people who live and work downtown, I would encourage everyone to stick around. I think people are thinking that they need to, you know, move out because the DNC is coming in. And I think that there's so many things that are going to be going out in the city. I know the DKH is going to be having huge activations in Millennium Park and in the Daly Center. But for Choose Chicago, what we're really focused on and what we've learned from past conventions is that the delegates and media that are coming here, you know, we have about 50,000 anticipated visitors. You know, they have their meetings. They're obviously here for the DNC, but they also come with families and partners or obviously themselves. And we really want them as much as possible to experience the city in and around their meetings. And so we've created 12 unique visitor guides that have been curated for delegates and media coming into town, all the way from family-friendly guides to foodie to architecture, working hand-in-hand with our partners. And those guides are going to be shared with them in their delegate bag. They're on QR codes throughout the city and advertising. And I think it's a really great opportunity to get them, you know, really direct itineraries for them to see our city in the short time that they're here.
I'd like to see one of those. I think that should be made available to everybody in the Chicago area.
They are. So they're public on our website. If you go to choosechicago.com, there's our DNC itineraries, and you can scan our QR code, and it will take you right to 12 itineraries. And I think the coolest thing about that is that you can also see what's going on in and around our 77 neighborhoods, which as a Chicagoan, I really think that that's where, you know, our definition of Chicago style, like we like to call it, comes to be. So definitely a free resource for everyone, not just our delegates.
Imagine some of them will head over to the West Loop. That's a very hot scene. You guys put up a new mural there, right?
We did. So we just put up a new mural right next to La Josie on Halstead, in between Randolph and Lake. And we worked with Katie Lukes, who is a local designer and muralist, to put up a mural called Chicago Style. And it features all of the things that, you know, us Chicagoans know to be uniquely us, particularly during the summer months. And we really like it because as people come into town, we want them as much as possible to understand what makes our city unique, not just, you know, the typical things, but also, you know, the community things that we know, are quintessential Chicago. So the Humboldt Park Boathouse, the Little Village Art, the Monument to Great North Migration in Bronzeville, the Water Taxi, Rainbow Cone, things like that that are quintessential Chicago. So it's up right now to the end of the month, and it's really beautiful, and we hope everyone goes and takes a look at it. There's also a QR code on that mural, and so you can scan it and go directly to those guides that we mentioned before.
Yeah, if I go to choosechicago.com, will I find it there, choosechicago.com?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like the sound of that. I like the sound of what you guys are planning. I'm also glad that there's a big volunteer appreciation day today over Wrigley Field for the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that are going to make the next 7-8 days in Chicago memorable for people all around the world. So good on you and good on them, Lisa.
Yeah, it's going to be a great night at Wrigley, so I can't wait.
Lisa Nucci is the Chief Marketing Officer at Choose Chicago, choosechicago.com. Bree Fowler joins us to talk politics. Okay, Bree, go.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's been a busy news week for sure. But at the White House today, there was a big meeting of social media influencers, which is kind of a different kind of thing to happen there.
Yeah.
And the president showed up too to, among other things, do the Dougie, which is a viral dance, I think, on TikTok.
So tell me what you just said. By the way, once upon a time when the Clintons were in the White House and Ira Magaziner and Hillary Clinton were trying to get a new healthcare program like Obamacare up and running, they tried, they couldn't get it done, but they called in talk show hosts from around the country. So there I was sitting with 100 talk show hosts. And isn't it interesting how there weren't influencers back then? We were. To some degree, we still are, but now they're more interested in reaching out to what sounds like online influencers, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of depressing as a member of the media. When Biden spoke to the group of more than 100 influencers, or content creators, as some of them like to be called, he talked about how they are represent the future and how people now get their news through them, and that this is how people communicate, and that, you know, things like the 6 o'clock news and radio and TV just aren't really how people are doing that anymore.
So what would somebody who's got a lot of followers on TikTok, something like that?
Yeah. I mean, people on TikTok, Instagram, you know, Twitter, just all these different platforms, they have followers and they talk about things. I mean, one of the people who showed up today, he just talks about taxes and, you know, tax tips. So it's not all, you know, cat videos and crazy dances and stuff. There's legitimate, you know, news and information out there for people as well. You just sometimes have to dig to find it.
Well, then what was the administration pitching to these people?
Well, you know, they're trying to get the attention of young people, you know, and the Trump campaign is doing this too, trying to get people to pay attention, to get people to vote. This is expected to be a close election, and young people don't vote in the same numbers as older people. So if you can kind of harness that untapped voter population, maybe you can win.
So get Kamala Harris or Donald Trump to do a silly but popular dance, or eat some popular food, or do some sort of contesting that happens out there, right?
Yeah, or they could even talk policy. I mean, there's an audience for that, too. You know, definitely things that go viral generally aren't the more serious policy-driven videos,
yeah.
But there's pretty much everything out there these days.
What's the fallout from this Google antitrust suit?
Well, this is the case in the story that will not end. A federal judge said yesterday that he's thinking about making major changes in how Google's Android App Store works. And that's to punish the company for engineering a system that a jury said was an illegal monopoly that hurt consumers and app developers. I mean, basically, people had to download apps through Google's App Store. Of course, Google got a cut of the money that people paid to get those apps. So that hurts developers. Consumers probably had to pay more. But Google argues that, you know, if you start just downloading apps that haven't been vetted, you're opening yourself up to a whole bunch of security issues.
So if I take out my iPhone, Google is the default app store on my phone, and I make a purchase via that, Google gets a cut of that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, that's Apple's app store you have on an iPhone. Google, this is dealing more with Android phones, but we have another case coming up, which, you know, this is kind of maybe foreshadowing what will happen with that, where, you know, a jury has declared that that there's a monopoly dealing with Google's search engine, which you do use on all kinds of devices, that, you know, that there are antitrust issues with that. So who knows how that one's going to turn out. But that's considered an even bigger case just because it deals with a much bigger market than just, you know, the App Store.
The number I saw this week was that 30% of the purchase price goes to Apple when you make a purchase through them. Does that sound possible?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They don't have any competition, which, you know, that's why a jury rules that these kinds of things are monopolies, potentially. They also argue that there are security issues involved when you could just download any app from anywhere. And Apple and Google, to their credit, do a really good job at vetting apps. I mean, stuff still gets through sometimes, but, you know, it's much safer to do that than do what they call sideloading, where you can download an app, you know, through other means into your phone.
They argue, say a Google or an Apple, that they're being punished for just being successful, doing really well what they do and beating the competition.
Well, that's particularly true with the browser, with Google's search engine. I mean, the Google search engine has kind of become like, you know, it's so ubiquitous. You know, we talk about Googling something. You don't talk about Binging something or Ask Jeeving something or Yahooing something. It's Googling. That's the browser that everyone uses. But Google also paid, you know, companies big money to make it the default browser. And the jury and, you know, courts have found that that's not necessarily fair.
That's monopolistic.
Yes. Yeah. Because they have such a big chunk of the market and they may not have gotten it through fair means.
Well, I think we all benefit when David does get a chance to take on Goliath, and that's what the federal government is trying to ensure, right?
Yeah, I mean, they want to make it, especially with the app stores, you know, to make sure that the consumers aren't getting fleeced, the developers can develop without having to, you know, shell out a huge chunk to Apple or Google. It's tough. I mean, that is a big cut one way or the other.
We're out of time. You're not coming to Chicago for the DNC, are you?
No, I would love to, but, you know, lots of stuff going on here these days.
Boy, I can tell, and you're following it well. We'll talk to you next week, Bree.
Have a good one.
Philip Shaw, Senior Advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. Well, things are settling down a little bit, and to the degree they're busy, it's on the positive side, right, Philip?
Yeah, things have been recovering well throughout the year. Obviously, we had a bit of volatility in the last week, but things have settled out and calmed down, you know, rather nicely since then.
I don't know if you subscribe to this, but it's been told to us a couple of times from a couple of places in the last couple of weeks that the last 3 months before a presidential election go the way that the market does those 3 months. If August, September, and October, the market finishes up, the incumbent stays in office. If those 3 months, the line goes down, the incumbent loses his seat. Do you think, without commenting on the probability of all of that, do you think the next 3 months are going to be up or down?
You know, I try not to give any good predictions on a three-month time range. I think there's too many variables that go into that. Uh-huh. I haven't heard the presidential, I haven't heard that one before, the 3 months before leading to the incumbent or not. But I definitely think that in a presidential election year, there are steps that the incumbents take to, you know, be more business favored, prop up the stock market or the economy as best as they can, trying to make sure everyone, you know, obviously feels good about where they stand. I definitely think that happens.
Well played, sir. Okay, well, then let's go on to some other things. Let's talk a little bit about the consumer prices, up 2.9% in July. What do you make of that?
You know, the inflation battle seems to be pretty well in check. Obviously, you know, we're still having prices increase, you know, year over year at 2.9% is still maybe a little higher than we'd want it to be, but it gives a really good indication that what the Fed has been trying to do, which is cool off inflation, has been pretty successful. And I saw, what was it, 90% of that was in relation to
housing.
Specifically housing.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, inflation, this is the page one of the Wall Street Journal today, hits its lowest level since 2021. That maybe that's not 2%, but it's under 3%. That's a good number, right?
That's a great number. Hopefully it means that come September, you know, we'll see an initial rate cut next month is the hope.
Well, more than a hope, right? I mean, that's almost certain. Is not the question now how much, and do you think it's a quarter or a half?
You know, as much as I want it to be a certainty, and I agree with you, when we were talking about this earlier in the year, we thought 3 to 4 this year. Now we're talking 1 to 2. Until they've done it, I say nothing's actually happened yet.
Yeah, well,
opinion, yeah. I think they're going to do 0.25%.
That would seem to be the safest course. But being too safe is what can get you in trouble, too, right? You do need to anticipate the market a little bit if you're the Fed, right?
You definitely need to anticipate. And the Federal Reserve has been pretty vocal about their intentions of how they wanted to handle this. I think they are more concerned of acting too fast, too soon than they are about waiting.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people out right now talking about 0.5% rate cut in September. I would not expect that from their first rate cut.
Well, is the next big thing that people are hoping happens, like unemployment's up a little bit, but it's not an unmanageable number, and inflation's cooling. Is the next big thing that we're all waiting to see what happens would be mortgage interest rates or just borrowing costs in general? That's what would also, if we're going to stay in a Goldilocks zone, have to come down a little bit, right?
Yeah, and a lot of that's going to trend along with the Fed rates and what the Federal Reserve does with their rates. But, you know, if they were able to drop interest rates sooner than later, and I would prefer they did 0.5% in September and they did another 0.5% or 0.25% in December, I think the inflation issue at this point has largely been handled, and housing's still the biggest piece of that.
Yeah.
So if they were able to drop interest rates, it would open up a huge window for people to be able to refinance, to take out cheaper loans, to be able to move where they feel like they're trapped in their homes today because of the low rates. And it may drive down that last piece of the inflation puzzle, which is our housing costs are through the roof. Can we bring that down?
Well, I wonder if interest rates came down in a way that people said, okay, I'm willing to get out of my 3% mortgage, if that's enough. That is, inventory is still a problem too, right?
Inventory is definitely a problem. Some of that may start being alleviated with lower interest rates because, you know, obviously if you're a home builder, you're also taking out debt to finance your construction costs. So with lower carrying costs, lower borrowing costs, some of that may come available as well. I think we need to incentivize home builders to massively increase inventory.
What do you mean incentivize?
I don't write legislation, so you know, I'm probably not the expert to say exactly what that is, but open up the ability for them to take out improved financing, give them access to lines of capital, give them access to, basically, we don't have enough homes, and a lot of the reason that we don't is coming out of the last major housing crisis, people were not open to building new construction the way they were maybe 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. If we took some of the pressure off of that, they may be open to building, developing, creating new opportunities for people to move and have cheaper housing.
Yeah, I wonder if you incentivize the builders or the buyers. I mean, think what we've done with automobiles. We said we'll give you $8,000 as a credit if you buy an electric car. That's, I guess, ultimately good for the makers of the cars because people are willing to buy them with that discount. I wonder what the equivalent of that would be for home construction, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if there's, a first-time homebuyer credit if it's a new construction property.
Yeah, right, exactly. And maybe there'd be a price cap on that. There are a whole bunch of ways to write that, and I'm sure a Democrat somewhere is thinking about that even as we speak, because it does sound like that sort of thing. But that thing could be net positive. That is, if in fact that generates more home sales, if it creates jobs, if it lubricates even more the supply chain, those are all positives. That might be money well spent, right?
I agree. Anytime I think about government spending, I consider it as a, what is our long-term outlook? What's our rate of return on this?
Yeah.
And I think incentivizing, new job growth, incentivizing new housing, construction, I think, spending money on schools and infrastructure, it's a dollar well spent every time.
And I'm not asking you to comment on anything political because that is a slippery slope. And when you consider, I just wonder how concerned you or any of us should be about the federal debt and deficit right now.
It is unsustainable in the long term.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what way you look at it. I heard a statistic the other day. If you exclude the tax revenue and the costs from Social Security and Medicare, it's something like 70% of all federal tax revenue goes to pay nothing but the interest on our debt.
This is WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're talking with Philip Shaw. Right now, though, we're talking with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Payroll and human services provider ADP is reportedly in talks to sublease a big chunk of property in Schaumburg. Cranes reports ADP is in advanced discussions to sublease about 150,000 square feet from Zurich, North America. The building's located along Interstate 90. If the deal goes through, ADP plans to relocate its suburban workforce to Schaumburg from Elk Grove Village. The building was completed in 2016 and sits on 39 acres. It's one of the newest amenity-laden office properties in the suburbs. A new report says Chicago ranks fourth in foreclosures in metro areas with more than a million people. The U.S. foreclosure market report for July shows one in every 2,200 housing units in Chicago had foreclosure notices, default notices, auctions, or bank repossessions. Chicago came in behind Las Vegas, Philadelphia, and Jacksonville, Florida. The report shows the number of foreclosures nationally was up 15% from June, but flat compared to last year. California, Florida, and Texas had the most foreclosure activity in July. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And I've got a question for this woman. How does it feel?
Oh, my gosh. It is just... it could not feel any better.
What feels so good and who she is. After, I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Michelle McBride is on the phone. More than a year ago, the Chicago sports mom told us she was trying to keep her kids from drinking the popular sports drinks, the ones with artificial ingredients and lots of sugar. So she tried giving them the natural sports drinks.
And my kids didn't want to drink them. But also, I've come to learn that they don't hydrate any better than plain water.
That led her to make her own drink and started Good Sport Nutrition. Her kids?
They love it.
So do a lot of pro athletes, which we'll get to in a minute. And thanks to the Dairy Farmers of America, ultra-filtered milk plays a huge role in what makes Good Sport different.
It sure does. Milk has a unique combination of electrolytes you can't find anywhere else.
She says a recent study at Arizona State University's Hydration Lab compared Good Sport with Gatorade and Body Armor. And Good Sport?
Hydrated significantly better and longer.
And while getting that scientific validation is critical, what is just as important for her small company with nowhere near the marketing budget of Gatorade and Body Armor is this.
We've had a number of athletes who've reached out to us, and Jonathan Owens was one of them.
Yeah, the former Packer, now Bear. And did I hear that he's married to somebody famous? Anyway, he was having trouble with muscle cramping, heard about Good Sport, tried it, and liked it.
And so he reached out to us, and he's just been, you know, absolutely incredible. He's truly a member of the team.
But there's one other mission she has beyond hydration. It's reminding parents and coaches of kids to be good sports.
It's not all about the win. Sports develops lifelong lessons that are so important. Let them learn. It's a safe place to learn. It's a safe place to fail. It's a safe place to get back up. That's what sports are about. That's what we're about.
Goodsport.com, and you can find it around Chicago at Jewel, Mariano's, and a few other stores. On the food calendar, it's National Lemon Meringue Pie Day. Yum. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Philip Shaw, the senior advisor at Goldstone Financials, on a phone line with us for just a couple more minutes. I asked you about credit cards and debt that people are carrying a moment ago. Just touch on that briefly, Philip, and then I wanted to ask you about what people should do when we see a dip like we did last Monday. Talk about credit card rates right now.
Yeah, credit card rates right now are at an all-time high, so we're seeing them over 20% right now on average, which is up about 4% from a couple of years ago. But this is still an area that, whether they're high right now or whether they were 16% a few years ago, probably the biggest area you want to knock out as soon as possible if you're carrying any credit card debt. You know, it's avoid buying things that you can't pay off right away. You know, maybe use it as an emergency line. But other than that, remember, anything you're paying 16% in interest on or 20% in interest on is going to become incredibly expensive very quickly. Might not be worth it.
Well, when we talk about lowering interest rates like a half a point, or when we talk about the Fed, and maybe that'll trickle down, if you had a half a point off on your home loan, that would be a big difference. A half a point off on your credit card is not going to, you're still going to be paying too much.
Yeah, you're going to be paying way too much, way too much. So it makes a difference, yeah, but not that significant.
Let's go back to last Monday. Has the landscape changed, or is it the same as it was before last Monday?
So the landscape has not changed very much in the last, 10 days here.
Right.
There's, reports that have come out. There's, weaker than expected employment data, lower than expected inflation. I don't think a whole lot has changed, but anytime we're in a bull market cycle, which we're very likely in, you tend to have these punctuated moments of more volatility. And the biggest thing is, don't overreact when you see it. You know, we've been in a great trend all year. We've been in a great cycle so far. When you see these, don't react emotionally, but also keep your financial plan in mind. Keep your long-term strategy in mind. If you have cash you need in the next 12 months, you probably shouldn't have it invested in the market. And if you have cash that you need in the next 20 years, the volatility today, I wouldn't be worried about it.
I get that. You do sound a little like, and this isn't a bad thing, what Terry Savage said, that, say, if you have a required minimum distribution coming up, you should have that in cash for this year and maybe next year too. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and it depends what you're going to need it for. If you're going to spend it, absolutely. If you're going to turn around and reinvest it, well, maybe you don't need to do that for the next 2 years.
Do you think, though, that what happened last Monday is a lot of people reacted to that with their own portfolios. They moved money around, either into conservative funds or out of equities entirely. What would you say, looking back 2 weeks now, on that sort of strategy?
I think it's an overreaction. If a day like that, if you have a negative 3% day in the market and it causes you to panic and make major decisions, you should have never been exposed like that in the first place.
Well, let me ask you this. When's that going to happen again, Philip? And then I'll know what to do.
If I could tell you that,
you wouldn't be sitting here talking to me. I understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been not as important to you, perhaps. But just one last piece of advice for you. I mean, it's an election year. We are in a bit of a bull market. Now, what are you telling investors right now?
I tell investors that in an election year to expect a bit more volatility, but I also consider the president to be a skipper of a very, very large ship with a small rudder. They can make changes, but the biggest thing that drives the stock market is people trying to innovate, invent new things, build and grow companies. I guarantee before Elon started launching rockets into space and landing them on drone ships in the ocean, he did not consider who the president would be 15 years later.
You weren't reading too much into Warren Buffett's moves last week?
No, he always has reasons for what he's trying to do. You know, he sold off a major piece of Apple. That could have been a decision where, you know, Berkshire Hathaway is lining up for a new major purchase. That could be a situation where they just looked at their portfolio and said, it's too big.
Yeah, right. That exposed to one stock. Philip Shaw is a senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. Click on goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Very interesting.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks, Philip. We appreciate you joining us.